So, Stephen McNew, it's your annual party conference. You've gone through the morning, you've had various elections, and you're still leader, I believe.
Yes, I can confirm that, yes.
And you've gone through various motions and so on. Tell us, what are the big issues for the Green Party at the moment as it stands in Northern Ireland?
Well, we're very much focused today on education and children and young people. So, essentially looking at young people from cradle to career, how we as a society support our young people and how we ensure their needs are met. So, we've had motions today on education. I'll be talking about my private members bill, which is focused very much at early years, because that's whilst we put a lot of focus on our education system, and rightly so, we often ignore the early years, not the six, when actually a lot of child development takes place, and indeed the consequences of social disadvantage can have shaped a child's future almost irreparably by age six. So we need to ensure that the government interventions are there, the support for families or children are there to ensure that children's maybe born in more impoverished homes don't have a lack of opportunities further in the future.
So you're fairly unimpressed with the executive's support for early years at the moment?
I think it's been atrocious. I mean, this is essentially why I'm doing my private members bill, because as a member of the all-party group on children and young people, when we first had our presentation on the draft early years strategy, we were told that it was a Department of Education policy. It wasn't cross-departmental, which I found incredible, because the Department of Education doesn't tend to come into a child's life at the earliest until age three, and this was a Not the Six strategy. So we had a Not the Six strategy at the start of the three, which I just thought was incredible. But it got to the heart of a fundamental problem with our government, and that's that we do still have departments and ministers operating in silos, and we need.
And you want a cross-departmental
approach? We absolutely do, and we believe it should be a duty on government to work across departments. Every department will, to a greater or lesser extent, have an impact on children's lives. They need to be working together and producing the strategies that relate to children, and in planning, commissioning, and delivering the services to children. And just to give one example, I was recently at the Home Start in North Down, and I asked them about their funding. They were able to identify three different sources of funding within the Department of Health, three different funding streams, three different application processes, and at the other end, three different administration processes. So government's used to hearing people saying, we want more money for this. What I'm saying is, stop wasting so much money on bureaucracy and different streams of administrations. Centralise that, make it easier for those on the ground to deliver services to children, and make sure that more money goes on delivering services to children.
You took a few motions this morning going through one about secular education. Did the party vote in favour of
The party passed a motion. I mean, this was a motion that I expected to be hugely controversial, and I was surprised, you know, and this still happens as leader of a party, that your party surprises you, that we voted overwhelmingly in favour of this. And I think it's important. I think a comment by my colleague John Barry, who's councillor in North Down Borough Council, made the point, this isn't about taking away religion from our schools, but it's about changing to a system where you opt in rather than opt out, because we have a system at the minute of almost enforced religious instruction, and it doesn't take account, and it's invariably Christian. We have a Catholic sector, a Protestant sector, and a Catholic and Protestant sector in the integrated sector. What we're saying is we should have inclusive education, an education system that takes account of the growing number of people who don't prescribe to a particular religion, or who prescribe to a different religion than the Christian religion. We don't believe that the state should be funding any institution that's exclusive, and for us as a party, that includes in terms of academic ability, socioeconomic background, but also religious identity.
Which should make your panel this afternoon with two clerics quite interesting.
Absolutely.
You also, opposed academic selection in schools as well. But there's an interesting one here about the Waldorf education. Mm. Last time I looked, Waldorf was a salad. But what's the Waldorf education model?
I suppose I would know it better as Steiner education, because we have a Steiner school in my constituency in Hollywood. And essentially it's about much more of a child focus. I think in our education system, sometimes the child is expected to fit around the system rather than a child-centred approach. It also looks at, you know, again, it's based on a lot more research. I mean, to some extent, we have an almost an archaic education system, although there's very good teachers who are constantly challenging the boundaries of our curriculum and going further and over and above what they're required to do. So I don't want to suggest for a second we don't have excellent teachers out there, but and to some extent in terms of our curriculum, you know, the fact that, for example, we start teaching children at age four and we don't have that flexibility, when actually the best research on neurological development suggests that that's much too early, and at the very least we need some flexibility at school starting age. But it's also about looking beyond the academic. And, you know, I was fortunate. I was academically quite strong. I was terrible at art, I was terrible at music, and I was terrible at sport, but I was trotted out as a success. Other people who were good at music, good at sport, good at, you know, the more hands-on crafts, they because they weren't good at English and maths and science, they were seen as failures. I think we need a much more holistic education system that recognises the child as a whole and the different contributions different children will bring to society.
Would you try and bring private members bills or influence committees at Stormont on those kind of issues, or is that just, will these just be policies that sit on the shelf as?
No, well, I mean, I'll certainly be looking at each of the motions we pass here today and seeing how I can best take them forward as a Green Party MLA. In terms of a private members bill, I'm currently engaged in one, and you know, the likelihood of doing another one within this term of the assembly is unlikely. But I will be looking at through private members motions, getting support from other parties, which I've done in the past. I've had two motions debated to date, and another coming forward, and a number on the table that are cross party motions. Through that type of mechanism, I'll look to take some of these forward, and at the very least be asking assembly questions on the issues.
As you sit at the back, kind of in the, I'm not going to say the naughty corner, but sometimes it feels like the naughty people are joining you, and you kind of look at the rest of the assembly as they're actually debating in the chamber. What's your impression of how well it's working and how well, you know, they're behaving and maturing as a kind of system?
I think we've still some way to go. We still have a system whereby the main opposition to the executive is the executive itself, you know, and we hear, you know, parties coming out and opposing executive party policies, you know, but they sit on the executive. So there's no collective responsibility. But then if we did have collective responsibility, we'd be in a problem because we've no opposition then at all, with the exception of myself and my three backbench colleagues. You know, but the system isn't geared to support us to act as an opposition in a formal sense.
How do you view the kind of the DUP Sinn Féin marriage, which sometimes seems to have a lot more argument than love?
Well, you know, I think anybody watching it from the inside, I think they agree on more than disagree. And actually, you know, it surprises me when you hear what both parties go out to their electorate and say, and then what they agree on. I think sometimes there is a certain amount of doublespeak in that regard. But I think, you know, if we compare ourselves to the Scottish Parliament, then I appreciate we do have different political climate in Northern Ireland, but different political context. I think in terms of what Scotland has been able to drive forward, I think the benefits of devolution have really been sold to the Scottish people. I'm not convinced the people of Northern Ireland have seen the full benefits of devolution that we could see if we had maybe better structures and a more coordinated approach from our executive. One caveat I would put to that, the first ever vote I had was the referendum on the Good Friday Agreement. I voted in favour, and we were told it's the people's agreement. If we're going to make major changes to the people's agreement, we have to ask the people first.
Just to finish off with some kind of quick fire stuff to kind of look through some of the issues and where you or the party can stand on them. But I mean, welfare reform.
Welfare reform, you know, we've been told by the health minister that £200 million that it would cost to maintain the current system is too big a price to pay. Yet when we talk about corporation tax, apparently that's a reasonable price to pay. I think in terms of protecting the most vulnerable to society, we should be doing everything we can to make sure that our welfare reform in Northern Ireland isn't a simple copy and paste job from what they're proposing at Westminster. I think we need to ensure that our system recognises local needs and gives a better deal to people who, it's been said many times, you know, when we talk about unemployment, people have this perception of people on the dole scrounging. But, you know, tell that to the people in FG Wilson who've just lost their jobs, who've worked all their lives in many cases, who find themselves unemployed. Tell that to young people who there are no jobs available for. Tell that to those who are genuinely disabled and need of support in the state. We have to get a better deal for all those people.
So the three compromises that Nelson McCausland kind of introduced suddenly last week, Are those enough for more change needed?
Well, one, he said he's happy to look at them, but we've no guarantees they'll come in. And no, I don't think it's enough. I think it's tinkering. I think it's important tinkering, to be fair. I think, you know, in terms of monthly payments to weekly or fortnightly payments is an important issue. I think the head of household issue does need to be addressed. But I think there are other fundamental issues that the minister seems unwilling to tackle.
Mary Stopes opening and offering, I guess, kind of sexual health advice and also kind of abortion. Where do you stand on the? What's the?
The question I asked of the health minister again on this issue is, given that he supports the current legislation and given due to the lack of guidelines, and today we did as a party pass a motion calling for guidelines on implementing how and when abortion can be carried out in Northern Ireland. You know, we've got a law that's currently unclear, and we've got the situation where women in instances where their lives are at risk or their long-term mental health is at risk who can't access services in the NHS because of this lack of guidelines. If the guidelines were there, we may not need Mary Stopes. Without the guidelines, there's arguably a demand for that service. And if you support, if Mary Stopes acts within the law, with the clinic has made it very clear that they will do, and the minister supports the current law, I don't see what the minister's problem is with the clinic, and I certainly have no problem with it opening in Northern Ireland.
What about the case in the last week of a very senior member in the legal system, kind of the Attorney General, John Larkin, kind of volunteering on a personal basis to actually intervene on this? Does that strike you as a fine thing for him to do in his own time?
It's not the only example where he seems to be acting in a personal capacity, but I think when you're in a position as important as Attorney General and as powerful as Attorney General, I think, you know, anything you do will shine a spotlight on your office. You're not an individual, you are a representative. My understanding of the roles of the Attorney General is to advise government on the law and to act as a guardian to law. It's not to seek to shape the law. That's actually the job of democratically elected politicians. And my fear is that some of the actions of our current Attorney General have sought to shape the law, not just in Northern Ireland, but indeed throughout Europe. And we've recently had essentially the Westminster government seek to distance itself, almost act as an apologist for our Attorney General. I don't think that does any favour for the credibility of the office, and I think some of his decisions have been unwise.
You have a lack of confidence in his position?
I personally have a lack of confidence in this Attorney General.
Lastly, as a party, are you going forward growing in numbers, growing in spirit, or is the notion of RPA and shrinking councils and potentially shrinking constituencies, or at least the size of the constituencies, are you kind of going to get very squeezed?
I think in the case of some of the reforms, there are reforms we can support. I think the amalgamation of councils doesn't serve local democracy well, and we oppose it on that basis. But I'm always very keen that we base our policies on good governance, not what's good for the party. So when it comes to reducing the numbers in the Assembly, we absolutely support that because we do believe it would create better governance. But reducing the number of councils, I think there's other ways we can reduce the financial burden of councils but maintain local democracy. But as a party, you know, we'll have to some extent, we'll have the context set out for us in which we can test elections. We go forward into the next elections positively. In terms of the development of our party, I think we've had some genuinely controversial issues, not just societally controversial, but controversial in our own party. Today, we've debated in a mature way, in a respectful way. We've agreed to disagree on some occasions amongst the membership here. But we, as we always do, look for a two-thirds majority for any substantive motion. And I think as a party leader, when you know that at least two-thirds of your party are behind any policy, you're empowered to go forward with confidence to speak on those policies and to challenge a lot of kind of the status cool thinking in Northern Ireland and to act as a genuine alternative and a genuine driver of change.
Okay, Stephen McNew, thank you very much.
Thank you.